Hey, you're not going to bed yet, are you? That's right. It's time for TV Good, Sleep Bad.
TV is awesome! TV is awesome! TV is awesome!
Now, here are your hosts, Daniel Lackey and Elwood Jones.
Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of TV Good Sleep Bad. I'm your host, as always, Mr. Elwood Jones, and of course, I'm joined by my co-host and partner in crime, Daniel Lackey.
Hello, hello, hello.
And for regular listeners, you may have noticed we went on a little bit of a break, and we are now obviously back to venture once more into the depths of cult TV hell. And once more look at the weird and wonderful world of cult TV as we look at those shows that you remember, the classic shows, as well as looking at some of those more obscure and little less seen, and often with good reason that they were forgotten. But we like to look at it all here, and certainly what we've looked at previously, I mean, we were just discussing off air before we came on, just like what we've looked at so far, and it's been an eclectic mix, to say the least. And I think going forward from what we have planned already on the board at the moment, I think it's not something that's not really going to change anytime soon. But thank you for obviously coming back and joining us for this episode. On tonight's show, we are going to be looking at the British sci-fi drama Invasion Earth. But before we obviously get into that, we'll be starting, as always, by asking what you've been watching. So, Lackey, I mean, we've obviously had about a four-month gap. What's sort of really been holding your interest in the meantime?
Oh, boy. So, in the last episode, I like to say my TV watching season is pretty much like the beginning of the year, pretty much like the first 5 months of the year is when all of my shows air. The Americans, Better Call Saul, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, a couple of others, they all pretty much, Bates Motel, all pretty much start in the spring or late winter or early spring and end pretty much by the beginning of summer, by about the last week of June. So a lot of my shows have come and gone by now. I seem to remember mentioning the Timeless finale. I know that's been and gone, and the This Is Us finale. So what's going on now? Better Call Saul is, I think Better Call Saul is wrapping up, just about getting to the end of its third season. I think we got about three or four episodes to go there. And this has been a particularly interesting season. We're getting a lot more into the this is where it's most closely resembling a prequel to Breaking Bad, in that we're not just seeing Saul and or Jimmy McGill in this case and Mike, but we're also seeing a bunch of other characters that we remember from the Breaking Bad. Mark Margolis, who plays Hector Salamanca, a.k.a. Tio, who we remember memorably sitting in a wheelchair and furiously ringing a bell throughout Breaking Bad. I think we're kind of getting into – he's been a pretty steady presence in both season two and season three. And it's always great to have him around, because I love that character and I love that actor. I've been a fan of Mark Margolis ever since he played Max's mentor in Pi. So I've always kept an eye out for him. And the big news, of course, this season is that Giancarlo Esposito has joined the main cast. So we've got Gus Fring, the owner and operator of Los Pollos Hermanos, and drug dealer on the side. So we're getting a lot of the backstory. So we're getting a lot of the backstory of Gus's relationship with the cartel, which was kind of coming to ahead in Breaking Bad. We're getting a lot of the early days here. Also, the one of my celebrity television actress crushes, Laura Fraser, the Scottish actress who played Lydia Rodart Quayle. I like to call her the nervous woman with the expensive shoes in the final two seasons of Breaking Bad. She just had a quick cameo a couple weeks ago. I guess they flew her out from Europe basically to do basically a two-minute scene with Giancarlo Esposito, and she has such fond memories and loves Breaking Bad so much that she willingly did it just to come and appear for 2 minutes and have one line. So, but it's, I mean, even apart from like seeing the Breaking Bad world, it's just the core of the show, I think, really is the conflict between Jimmy and his brother Chuck, and Bob Odenkirk. I've always been impressed with Bob. I remember saying back when, and I think I may have touched a little bit upon this on their Mr. Show episode, where I remember saying about Bob Odenkirk, it's like at the time I thought that guy could probably do some really good dramatic stuff, but I'm not really all that surprised here. But Michael McKean, who plays Chuck, I am really impressed with his performance. And I mean, he's always been a good comic actor. You know, I've been a fan of his ever since Spinal Tap, and he goes further back even than that. If you remember Lenny and Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley, but this is, I don't think I ever realized he had such strong dramatic chops. So Better Call Saul is one of my favorite shows right now. The Americans will be airing its fifth season finale tomorrow. This has been an exemplary season. The season four was a bit of, other than a couple of important deaths, season four was a little bit of a slow burn, but season five really ratchets up the emotional, I guess the emotional carnage, to the point where, in the wake of Gabriel's decision to retire from being Philip and Elizabeth's handler and return to Russia, it's really been to the point where we've always known that Philip is a bit of a weak link, but the episode I last watched, I'm a couple episodes off. I'm a couple episodes behind, but where Elizabeth is now even considering packing it in, that is just Elizabeth. And this has really been – The Americans has really been a tour de force for Kerry Russell, Elizabeth being probably the harder and more ruthless of the pair. To see her – to finally see kind of the toll that it's taken on her – has really been one of the highlights, one of the things I will remember best about this series. Let's see, Bates Motel had its final season. I know it was a bit of a controversial decision to... I don't want to spoil too much of this for you because I know you've seen Bates Motel, but have you seen the final season yet?
I've not really been following Bates Motel. I mean, obviously, I've been aware of Bates Motel. I know that they cast Rihanna in that sort of iconic role. Because yeah. I keep seeing like clips of this final series, and we're now obviously into Psycho territory,
right?
And obviously, the clips all show Rihanna there, and she's obviously playing the Janet Leigh role.
Yeah, Marion Crane.
Yeah, so I've seen sort of like the clips of that, and I mean, it was one of those shows that it started, and I missed like the first season or whatever it was, and I just never picked it up, but I've obviously been aware of it in the background. So it's been interesting, obviously, seeing how it goes along, and it's been interesting the fact that they've chosen to take the same move as Hannibal and try to move into the actual main material rather than just being a prequel. Obviously, right. With Hannibal, we ended on Red Dragon. We're constantly being teased that when Hannibal comes back, we're going to go into Silence of the Lambs. and beyond. So it's an interesting move to obviously see Bates Motel be give us the second attempt to recreate Psycho. I don't know why people are still trying to do that, but I mean, is it working from the perspective of Bates Motel?
From the perspective of Bates Motel, there are certain creative decisions that Cary Erlin and Carlton Cuse made that I'm going to try to talk around the issue as much as possible without giving too much away. But they made some creative decisions that I thought worked very well and indeed turned out, I think, to be very necessary in terms of, you know, what in terms of kind of dealing with the legacy of the original film of Hitchcock. But they have been a little bit they've been a little bit, I guess, controversial. Let's say that. Okay. But for the most part, I think Bates Motel ended on a very, very strong note. Really, it's this is a show. I think the thing that I always felt about Bates Motel is I liked the sort of deconstructive attitude that Erlin and Cuse took to the character and to the mythology of Psycho. But I don't think Bates Motel is a show that could have worked without a cast this powerful, without Vera Farmiga, Freddie Highmore, Nestor Carbonell, Max Thério, and Olivia Cooke. Also, I got more of my favorite secondary character, my favorite recurring character, who is Chick Hogan, played by Ryan Hurst of Sons of Anarchy fame. Just the wonderful kind of chance for the show to kind of not be he's an eccentric guy, and it's just so much fun watching him. It's really one of the highlights of the show. But yeah, I think Bates Motel ended on a very strong note. I'm trying to think what else there is. Doctor Who. We're in series 10 of Doctor Who. We're about halfway through. This will be Peter Capaldi's final season. We all know that Stephen Moffat is leaving. He's turning over to Chris Chibnall, who will be taking over Series 11, so the final episode apparently for Peter Capaldi will be the Christmas special. There has been no announcement of a new Doctor. I don't think there will be for a couple of months, but as far as Series 10 goes, I don't think it's as strong as the first two Capaldi seasons, but there's been some pretty good stuff so far. But I just don't think it's quite as strong. But it's had some good episodes. I really liked the one with the emoji robots, and I liked the most recent one with the pyramid that appears out of nowhere in the Middle East. So,
okay.
I think that about covers it.
Yeah, I mean, just obviously touching Doctor Who. I mean, I've watched very little Doctor Who. I think the revival stuff, I never was able to get on board with the tone of the revival series, so I think I tapped out very early. I think the last one I watched was when the Christmas episode where we had the switching of the Doctors previously, and it's always interesting to see how a Doctor's going to bow out, but to have a Doctor essentially die of old age was kind of an anticlimactic ending, so it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I struggled to watch the new ones. I think for myself, it ended around the Doctor Who movie for myself when we had the American remake. So it sort of ended Sylvester McCoy's era and brought in the new Doctor who I can't remember who was it that they brought in for the one shot.
Paul McGann.
The Paul McGann, and they obviously did more Paul McGann stuff with like the audio plays, and I think there's some books as well that went with it. I keep seeing Paul McGann's like turning up in the new series. People were saying that he's like coming back, so I think
they did about 4 years ago when they had the 50th anniversary special, they The big reveal of the 50th anniversary special was that there had been an incarnation of the Doctor between Paul McGann and Christopher Eccleston that nobody ever knew about that was played by John Hurt. So what they ended up doing for the 50th anniversary is they did a webisode where Stephen Moffat brought back Paul McGann and showed the regeneration from McGann to John Hurt. And then the 50th anniversary special at the end, John Hurt regenerates into Christopher Eccleston.
Right.
In as much as you could have done it without Christopher Eccleston actually having been there, which he wasn't.
Yeah, Christopher Eccleston was always an awkward choice for a Doctor.
Yeah. I mean, I think he did very well in the role, but...
It's, yeah, I think it was the whole... For myself, with Doctor, I think the point I tapped out was, like, when you've got Noel Clark being in there as probably one of the most irritating companions. I mean, this is it, saying the fact we have Billy Piper as a companion, and he's still more irritating than her. we decided that we're going to do the adult spin-off Torchwood, and that was fucking appalling. Excuse my French.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the Children of Earth miniseries.
Okay.
The 5-episode one that they did. That was like proper science fiction drama.
Yeah.
Everything else Torchwood did is there's a few episodes here and there that are good, but most of it is just fluff and not very good fluff.
It's, Torchwood gave us Gwen Cooper, again, another of the most irritating characters to visit in the Doctor Universe, and I think it must make, like, all those who, like, appeared in, like, the original series feel so much better about their characters that were, like, previously bashed. The fact that they're like, well, we were bad, but we're not saying not as bad as Gwen Cooper.
Yeah, I mean, I can really imagine there's, like Nicola Bryant and Bonnie Langford. I think Mel Bush might have been one of the most hated companions ever on Doctor Who. I remember there was in our Chicago TARDIS, the big Doctor Who convention we do here every year. There's a group that does an MST3K style riffing of a story every year, and the last time I attended, they did. Her first story, Mel Bush's first story, was I think the third segment of Trial of a Time Lord, and literally their response to her first line was "God, I hate her already." but yeah, I have to think that Bonnie Langford, wherever she said, yeah, at least I'm not, you know, Gwen Cooper.
That's true, but I mean. Obviously, just on my own picks, I mean, it's safe to say that the Lackey's influence has certainly been felt with the time that's passed. First up, obviously, we have to mention the fact that I've pretty much binge-watched all 12 seasons of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. We watched one on our last episode. So I went back in, and I watched one episode after the other, and... Always Sunny in Philadelphia, if you've yet to see it, it is just so wonderfully warped. It's one of those shows that if you've got a warped sense of humor, you'll certainly like it. But at the same time, it's a show where you have these four original characters, and then we have the introduction of Dan DeVito's Frank. So we end up with these five really nihilistic characters who... If there's a vice that can be broken, they will do it. They have very little morals, and... They never seem to get punished for their actions, but everyone else around them does. In particular, we've got this character, Cricket, who starts off as a priest, and over the course of the series descends into drug addiction. He takes part in a dog fight as a human. he gets ringworm. It's just disgusting what happens to him.
If there's any sort of degradation a human being can go through, Rickety Cricket has suffered from it.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a show where they're not satisfied just to give us Lethal Weapon 5, but also give us Lethal Weapon 6. We give us the greatest drinking game of all time with Charlie McDennis.
Oh, yeah.
just on the subject of Charlie McDennis, last night before we obviously did this recording, we did our Deadpool draft over my own podcast, the MDS Showcase, where we were talking about deaths in movies. And I thought, you know, it'd be really fun that we'd do it all in the framework of Charlie McDennis. And of course, it's only myself and Lucky who'd apparently seen Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so all the references.
I was not entirely sure what you meant by that. Was I supposed to, like emotional battery? Was I supposed to engage an emotional battery and try to, you know, bully Kim until or Greg until one of them cried? Was I supposed to be able to take a dart to the middle of my hand and feel no pain? or accept Chumbawamba as the best band ever?
The idea that we started with our box wine and cheese section, so it would all be polite, and I was hoping that someone would end with the line of, okay, and suck my dick.
Gentlemen suck. I nearly did, and it's like, I don't know these other two. I don't really want to break any taboos. Oh my god, I don't know. I'm not always, I've been trying to watch my mouth lately. I've been hanging around a lot of kids, and I just don't want to. I'm a little bit, for whatever reason, last night I was a little bit more, self-conscious about swearing. Yeah. I didn't want to say, "Gentlemen, suck my dick," or do a Maori war chant or whatever.
Just the Charlie McDennis episode in particular. In many ways, it's a budget episode for the season because it all takes place in the one set. But this is also an episode where we see Donny DeVito not only put in a dog cage, but forced to eat the ingredients to make a cake while having beer thrown in his face by Dennis. It's so nihilistic. And, I mean, the episode where they essentially recreate Die Hard. This is a show where you just, like, you think you've got it all figured out, and then they throw something completely different into the mix or find some new way to throw you off guard. And while you shouldn't root for these characters, you somehow do. You find yourself still rooting for the plight of these characters and caring about them.
As awful as they are, and I mean, these are just, I mean, they just, they're horrible. They're horrible, and they just drag down everybody around them. I mean, Rickety Cricket is probably the best example, but there's also the waitress and Bill Ponderosa and the lawyer. Just people, they just bring out the worst in other people.
Yes, and I mean, we've obviously also got, let's not forget, we've also got the two incestuous brothers.
Oh, the McPoyles! Yeah!
Who...
Go on.
Oh, the McPoyles who just sit around drinking milk, and they're just so sweaty and disgusting, and that they claim they come from a strong bloodline because they've all been incestuously breeding. Oh.
They've got the one sister with the unibrow and their father. I remember they did the, a couple years ago, they did the Trial of the Century episode, and I didn't remember that Pappy McPoyle had already shown up. They have this scene where Pappy McPoyle is taking the stand, and Pappy McPoyle was revealed to be Guillermo del Toro, probably as a result of Charlie Day having been in, what's that called? Pacific Rim. And, It's Guillermo del Toro basically dressed up as a leprechaun, and he takes the stand, and I just lost it. I mean, it's just, oh my god.
Yeah, so I mean, that's obviously been a big obsession. Obviously, still on the Netflix kick. I watched the show, which I think everyone's been talking about, and that's 13 Reasons Why. This was a show I was initially skeptical about, mainly because it's been so hyped and everyone's wanted to talk about this show. And it was actually my wife, she went and said, "Oh, I really want to watch this show." And I was like, "You know what? Fine, we'll watch it." And I was hooked. I mean, we were watching this two episodes at a time, like consecutive nights, so we burned through it in a week. And it's certainly covers a whole range of the usual teen angst. There's obviously suicide, there's drugs, there is sexual experimentation. There's a rape storyline in there, and it's shocking and humorous in places, and it takes you for this whole range, and it's such a wonderful mystery and how it unfolds and how all these characters play into the life of this girl who's committed suicide and left these tapes to slowly piece together the reasons why she chose to take her own life. And at the moment, it is being commissioned for a second season. Frustratingly, they have decided that they are going to keep the same characters and deal with an aftermath of the first season. I think that's an absolutely stupid idea, because the first season is very self-contained. It felt like we'd reached the end of the story and there is nothing really more to do with these characters. And the better decision would have been to start again, have a different group of characters, go 13 episodes, and just use the framework for a different group of characters, but sadly that's not been the case. So it remains to be seen whether season 2 is going to work or not, but for myself, I'm not holding out much hope, just because I don't think there's anything really there to build upon. I mean, have you seen 13 Reasons Why yet?
It's sort of weird. I don't think it's received the level of hype over here that it has other places. I had not, in fact, even heard of it until people started talking about it on my Facebook feed. And amongst my friends, it's got something of a little bit of a mixed reception. There are people who have had your response to it, and there are others who have basically accused it of being exploitative and insensitive, and apparently it's based on a young adult novel, and apparently one of my friends had even read the novel and said the novel is exploitative. Just really kind of treats this kind of completely mishandles it. So it's not something that really grabbed me when I looked up what it was about, and it just, like, out of nowhere people are saying this and this and this, and it's like, what's this 13 Reasons Why? I've never heard of it. What I've read about it, it's one of those things where I can't honestly say I'm all that interested in it, primarily because I'm going to kind of leave it as at my teenage years were not particularly happy.
Yeah.
And I don't really have a whole lot of urge to revisit a lot of the themes that would kind of reflect why I didn't really have a happy teenage experience.
Okay.
But that's just me. I'm not saying it is or is not exploitative, because I haven't seen it, and I'm not gonna, you know, tisk anybody and wave my finger like I think I'm somebody's mother. It's just, it's not something that it I don't think I would appreciate it.
Okay. I mean, the reason I really vibed with the series is that it shows a very similar tone to the game Life is Strange, which, if you've obviously seen 13 Reasons Why and are looking for a good companion piece, then definitely check out the game Life is Strange, which is, again, a high school set drama and has elements of time travel in it. And it's, I thought that the two were very similar in tone. I mean, it's one of those shows that you know after the first episode if you're going to continue for another 12. So you get a pretty much good idea straight on. It's not like one of these shows where you have to watch like 3 or 4 episodes to get the idea of what's going on. So, but yeah, it was definitely an enjoyable Netflix experience. It's great the fact that Netflix are still putting out like such quality shows. I mean, when they first came out with like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, people weren't sure how to take it. And looking ahead to the schedule, especially as they move forward in this model just to produce original content, we've got like Glow, the women wrestlers drama, which is from the makers of Orange is the New Black, coming up.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
largely on the basis of Alison Brie.
It's got Alison Brie. It's got Marc Maron as the sort of manager of the company. The actual documentary about the company itself, Glow, the Glamorous Ladies of Wrestling, is available on Netflix as well. So if you want to see the inspiration for the show, you can see that, and it's a really fascinating documentary. We've got the film Circle, which has got Tom Hanks coming out, which seems to have a little bit of a Black Mirror sort of vibe to it. The downside, of course, being that it has Emma Watson in it as well. But
yeah. That was, I don't know, did that not get a theatrical release in Britain?
It didn't get a theatrical release. As far as we're aware over here, it's a Netflix original.
It got a brief. I don't think it did very well. I was, I kept a bit of an eye on it because Karen Gillan is also in it. And they're just like, I'm just watching the trailer. It's like, oh, it's Tom Hanks. Oh, it's like, is that Darren Gillan sitting next to Emma Watson? And it was.
Yeah.
But it did get a brief theatrical run in the States. So I was kind of surprised to hear it referred to as a Netflix original.
Okay. The main show, though, which has really sort of blown my mind, is Attack on Titan. We've just now into season 2, which is just proven to be as fantastic as the first season. The first season is a little bit of a slow burn, as it encapsulates 4 years of these characters' lives. Really sort of came into its own in the sort of latter half of the season, and it's this. What we've seen already of season 2 has been absolutely fantastic, and you can catch it on Crunchyroll if you want. If you get a subscription to Crunchyroll, you can watch it the same day as it's shown in Japan, or a week later if you're cheap like myself and just have a free membership. So you can catch up with your season 2 over on Crunchyroll at the moment. Other than that, we've got Silicon Valley has now returned for a new season, and much like Veep, I've kind of been struggling to get into the season. I don't know if I've just not been following it. It just hasn't grabbed me the same way that the previous seasons have. So I'm hoping that it pulls it together, but at the moment it's not been the best season that they've had, and it seems to be kind of spinning its wheels trying to figure out what it wants to do, so I'm keeping a close eye on that one to obviously see what comes up.
Unfortunately, I never continued with it past that first season, and okay. I really, really ought to do that. I did hear that T.J. Miller is leaving the show. I don't know whether they've written him out yet or whether he won't be returning or what, but that's something that's just been recently announced.
That would be a big loss to the show. Because he is kind of the linchpin in many ways to the group. It's all like, well, who's going to play that role? Because he's so different than everyone else. Everyone else has sort of like their role. And I would say there's other characters you could afford to lose, like Dinesh you could afford to lose. Other characters like Guilfoyle are kind of more essential. And I would say T.J. Miller would have been another essential character, but I suppose now he's obviously getting more attention from doing things like Deadpool, that he probably doesn't have the time to do the series anymore, but that would be a shame to lose him. So hopefully they can work out a deal to keep him on a bit longer.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, though, we're going to be going into our selection for this episode, which is Invasion Earth.
So this thing we want to do, what exactly is it?
I think it's a podcast.
I think he just made that word up.
Well, anyway, what would it be about?
It can be about those things we see in the things, you know, with the pictures and the acting, and sometimes Ryan Gosling.
Oh, you mean films?
Yeah, those. We can talk about those.
And Ryan Gosling.
And what would we call it?
Women who speak weirdly?
Ladies? Young ladies? All the single ladies?
Oh, wait, I know. Oh, chicks with accents.
Yeah, and we could use that song from the Beatles and that movie, Across the Universe.
Cool. Yeah. Listen to the Across the Universe podcast, brought to you by the Chicks with Accents.
Available just about everywhere.
And we're back. Obviously, in the first half, we talked about what we've been watching. We're now on to our solo pick for this evening, which is the show Invasion Earth. This was put out by the BBC way back in 1998, which also could be argued when the BBC was kind of coming to the end of putting out content that I actually wanted to watch, and before it obviously became this sinkhole that I'm now forced to throw money into for my TV license, and which goes to fun programming that Lackey enjoys.
Yeah, like Oh, God, I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one about the midwives. Called The Midwife, yeah.
And,
and good old Doctor Who.
Yeah, so...
Well, thanks, Elwood.
Yeah,
Your sacrifice is appreciated.
So, I'm glad that someone's getting something out of it. But, yeah, this was released back in 1998. It's a six-episode series, and it was made in collaboration with the Sci-Fi Channel. And the series itself, it's a sci-fi drama, and it's about where Earth discovers that it's being caught in the crossfire between two interdimensional alien beings, and it focuses on this small little NATO force who are basically trying to first of all figure out what these aliens are, and second, how they're going to obviously try and defend Earth from being invaded. This is a series which is surprisingly dark, especially for the BBC, but at the same time I think that it's very British in that tone, in the fact that we kind of like our sci-fi a little darker than the States. We don't always have to have a happy ending on our series, and that's certainly something that really is one of the most memorable aspects of this series. But the show itself, it starred Vincent Regan as well as Maggie O'Neill. We also featured Fred Ward from Tremors, who plays an American colonel in the show. And I couldn't help but wonder if his inclusion was basically so we could sell it back to the Americans. But
probably.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, one of the reasons I recommended this, brought this to the table, and sort of wanted you to watch it, and is the fact that watching this show, it has a very much a feel of like old school Doctor Who, especially like the Sylvester McCoy years for myself. But I mean, what did you obviously make of Invasion Earth?
I thought it had a lot of potential. I liked a lot of the ideas there. I felt it was, at six episodes, I felt it was a bit of a slog, and it could just be, I've alluded here and there to, I've had a very busy personal life and apart from the podcasting. So I do wonder if maybe I just had a little bit of a reduced attention span. But it's something I had a little bit of a hard time following. There is just, in particular, it's got some great ideas. As you said, the plot line is that we are the world has kind of hit gotten to crossroads between a generally, I guess, benevolent alien race called the Echoes, and then a bunch of interdimensional Cthulhoid monsters known as NDs. And one of the more important supporting characters is a character who was abducted by the NDs back in during World War II and has only just recently been returned to Earth. And the thing that kept distracting me is that he's actually the only person other than other actor in this production that I recognize other than Fred Ward. He's played by Anton Lesser, who plays Maester Qyburn on Game of Thrones. And I kept thinking to myself, I could not, like, that's Maester Qyburn. That's Maester Qyburn. And he's going on about how he can't help and how we're all screwed, The basic setup of the first episode kind of impressed me because it's so close to the, and I have to think that the writer-producer, Jed Mercurio, had to have been aware of this, the UFO episode we did earlier this year. Almost identical setup, even right down to the UFO being shot down by the test pilot who's following the UFO, and he has someone specifically tell him, no, stand down, come back, do not fire on that thing, come back, and his co-pilot or whatever getting killed. That was a nice touch. It is pretty dark. Just about every time we think we've got an idea of how to deal with the NDs. The NDs just turn out to have something even bigger and scarier up their interdimensional sleeve, to the point where, and I mentioned this off recording, but I just did not have a chance to see the final episode. The big cliffhanger of episode 5 is we think we figured out we have a way to deal with the NDs, and instead they teleport a gigantic pyramid of tentacles to our planet. I did kind of feel that a little bit of the narrative was disjointed, and it was kind of hard trying to keep up with everybody's theories of what's going on. It's like, they're putting estrogen in the water. They're manipulating things. They want to replace the entire human race with women. They're doing something with serotonin. They're using us. They're milking us for serotonin. They're going to come and they're going to destroy us. No, they're going to do this. No, they're going to do that. And it's just like, I found it a little bit overwhelming. There's just so much over the course of six episodes. There's just so much going on, so many characters, and so many things and so many ideas. I really kind of feel that this would have been better served by some judicious pruning, and cut down to maybe about 4 installments instead of 6.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters to include in this. I mean, obviously we've got Flight Lieutenant Chris Drake, played by Vincent Regan, and we have that Top Gun inspired moment where his co-pilot's obviously killed, and that's how he's brought into obviously this UFO conspiracy. We've obviously got our main female lead, Dr. Amanda Tucker, who is part of this like SETI Watchers, and she's sort of tracks the signal in a way she's brought in. I mean, she is probably one of the more interesting characters in this, in the fact that she's got this very dubious past where she wanted a daughter, so she seduced her university lecturer so that her child would be born with sort of a higher IQ, and that she was engaged in her own sort of selective breeding. And it's weird that she's has all these sort of like high ideas of what she wants for herself and what she wants for her child, yet she's still portrayed this as like the doting mother character who hangs around with like the conspiracy nut. It kind of like was a weird characterization that you felt that you would have. She felt like a blending of two characters in many ways, but as it goes on, her journey goes, and she becomes increasingly paranoid. I mean, at one point she's kidnapped and she's actually infected by the NDs, and turned into sort of like this human alien hybrid. And as you said, like, there's so many different ideas floating around in the series as what the actual invasion plan is, that it could have done with some trimming down. We've got like one of the lieutenants is turned into human alien hybrid, and we see him going off and he's then infecting the water supply. But it's sort of like, do we really need that? Can we not just focus on dealing with the NDs without having all these additional storylines that seem to only be there to pad out the runtime? And I think you're right that this is a show that could have done with trimming off a couple of episodes. While we obviously have this plot going on, we also have the story of Lieutenant Charles Tyrell, who played by Anton Lesser, and he is introduced in England in 1944, and he's like a member of a bomb disposal team working in like the Blitz London, and he discovers this crash UFO, and he sort of forms this sort of friendship with this down pilot who turns out to be one of the Echoes, and he's actually turns up in modern day, and he's not aged at all, and he's been off with the Echoes studying their race, and he's like the human liaison, so to speak. And I found his character arc very interesting, and certainly when we find out what happened, certainly his past from like 1944 through to present, I thought that was an interesting arc to the story. But there was, you're right, it's just a show that just really could have done with some trimming. But I mean, the actual alien designs here for like both the Echoes and the NDs, I mean, did you like what the BBC did? I mean, obviously this being the BBC, they do have a rather limited budget compared to what we would now throw in a TV show.
Well, I mean, I go into any TV show, and you have to, I guess, adjust and modulate your expectations. I mean, yes, the effects are kind of cheesy. The particularly the big swirly golden swirly thing, dimensional transwarp thing that the NDs use to kidnap people, which seems to happen roughly every 3 minutes in episodes 4 and 5. That's a very cheesy effect. Mind you, it probably wasn't as cheesy an effect in 1998 as it is now, because whenever you have any sort of that sort of golden, sparkly, pixelated energy is basically the bog standard depiction for any sort of alien or magical energy now. As being a Doctor Who fan, it is the whenever there's a regeneration on Doctor Who, I can imagine that there's somebody out there who watched this in 1998 and thinks to themselves, their initial response is the NDs are coming and not Peter Capaldi's going to die and turn into somebody else. But it's become such a cliched effect over the years because of use and use and overuse. The few scenes you have in the ND's home dimension are actually quite effective, because they're kind of shot through a filter, and it's very claustrophobic, and it's very weird looking, and you're not entirely sure what you're looking at. I thought that in terms of effects was very effective. But I mean, I understand it's a BBC production. It's a TV production. It's a BBC production from 1998. And even today, there's very few productions that will get the amount of money that Game of Thrones, the effects budget of a single Game of Thrones episode generally would be enough to cover, 90% of an entire season of any other effects driven show out there, So I'm not going in expecting, I'm not expecting brilliant production values. When I come up with something like this, it's more of a question of, am I buying the characters? Am I buying their response to this? And if I can accept that, then I'll have an easier time accepting that what they're actually emoting towards is something that they can actually see and not just like a CGI effect added in post.
Yeah, when we obviously go into the alternate dimension, I don't know if you thought the same, but I couldn't help but think of the film Skyline.
I don't think I've ever seen Skyline.
Oh, okay. It's the ending of Skyline, we end up on the alien ships, and it's all very biomechanical. And it just reminded me so much of when we obviously see the NDs, sort of what we assume to be their dimension, and it's all very sort of like biomechanical. It's kind of like the alien hive of aliens, where it's all sort of like slime and
slimy and webbing and stuff.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
So I can't help but think of that. And I mean, I have to give the show its credit. It has no qualms about killing off characters.
Oh dear God, no!
You think Game of Thrones is bad? They really swing the hatchet far and wide on this one. So don't get attached to anyone, because this isn't the show which is going to have an happy ending. And I mean, spoiler alert: this show has one of the most memorable endings of I would say one of any British sci-fi drama though, and we basically end with the prospect of a cursed Earth, where they figure out the only way to defeat the NDs is to basically drop nuclear bombs around these portals and stop them from drawing materials which they're using to fuel the portals. So we're essentially faced with this nuclear Earth as sort of like this final option for defeating the NDs, and we end on the white screen of a nuclear explosion. We don't even find out if we win. It's just like a very bleak and ending that we end on. We basically have Dr. Stucker wander out into front of this like tentacle structure that they've built, and then it just explodes into white, and it's still like, yeah, end credits, that's it. There's your six episodes.
I guess the question I have in reading the, and this is not something I was able to figure out, is this something that they ever conceived to be a running series that they just never, the BBC just never, or Sci-Fi just never commissioned the follow-up? I mean, were there any ideas they had as to following this up, or was this always supposed to be six episodes?
I believe it was just a one shot production. I mean, certainly there's never been any sort of details there to indicate that it was going to be more than one series. I mean, certainly when it ended, I think a lot of people were expecting a second season, which we never got. So it's certainly an unusual ending. And I think if you like that sort of end period for the original Doctor Who series, then I think you may get a kick out of this, because they're very similar in tone. It's kind of like, I mean, what was the military unit in Doctor Who called?
The what in?
Huh? The military, the Brigadier's unit in Doctor Who.
Unit. United Nations Intelligence Task Force.
Yeah, it felt, when I was watching this, it felt in many ways, if you did like a Doctor Who story, and you just follow UNIT, like, the Doctor's not in it at all, he's not coming to bail anyone out, it's just UNIT dealing with the situation, you would essentially have what we have with Invasion Earth, I felt.
In other words, something like Torchwood, except much less stupid?
Yeah, and without Bloody okay. Gwen Cooper.
Without Bloody Gwen Cooper.
Yeah, and I guess that would be, that's the comparison I came, because I've yet to see anything quite like Invasion Earth. I mean, everything else that we've seen in dealing with like alien invasion has always sort of had the happier ending. We've never seen anything that goes this sort of dark with its ending. So,
yeah, I mean, it's and Britain does have a bigger tradition, a stronger tradition of the single series. I guess story, self-contained. I mean, not that we haven't done, not that miniseries weren't or haven't been a thing in the United States, but the one that I keep going towards when thinking about this is, I think it was, and I haven't seen it, but I know something about it. I know what it's about. Edge of Darkness from the 80s,
okay,
which
yeah.
was basically kind of like a proto. Sort of happening. It basically kind of like this whole conspiracy thriller and elements of environmentalism and Nature Striking Back. That's what this really reminded me of, and it also kind of reminded me of Quatermass, the old Quatermass serials.
Yeah.
Which also, they had their happy endings. You know, Bernard Quatermass would always, by the end, figure out how to get rid of the alien nasties, but there is a sort of, I guess, cynicism to Quatermass, particularly like in Quatermass in the Pit, where kind of like humanity's dark side is something that's been bred into it by aliens, that I thought really was very reflected here. I see a lot more. I see Doctor Who, don't get me wrong, I see particularly late era Doctor Who in here, the Sylvester McCoy era, where, in particular, the then script editor, Andrew Cartmell, was really trying to make it work as much as a proper drama, as much as a kid's show. Some of the darker and more thoughtful, you know, stories like Ghostlight, even if Ghostlight is not perhaps maybe the best one to compare it because it's so quirky, or Remembrance of the Daleks. But where I keep going back to is these reminded me so much of Quatermass. That's where my mind went.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of those shows that I feel that if you like British sci-fi, then you should check it out. And at the same time, it's kind of acquired taste, as you said. I think certainly on this rewatch, and I think it's now we're so spoiled with having more sort of streamlined drama that we're not when we have something that tries to expand upon itself the way that we have here, then we kind of don't really we just tend to struggle with it more. But I remember when I first originally watched it, I had no problems with it, but now obviously returning to it with sort of like as an older viewer, I could definitely see what you're saying with there's characters that can be cut, and there's a way you could have trimmed this down a couple of episodes. But yeah, I mean, I still enjoyed it.
it's like I said, it's almost overstuffed with ideas, and that's what made me wonder if there was maybe a plan, if this got good ratings or was well received, to go into a second season, because there's all of these kind of things that they mention as background. There are all these things in there that are kind of background details. You mentioned the most obvious one, which is Dr. Tucker and her daughter, the circumstances under which she conceived her daughter. But there's also kind of like with, you know, other things like other like character moments that I think might have been developed more in a second series. You know, Drake and Drake's inability to kind of carry on a relationship, which they kind of start to sort of move towards resolving towards the end of the series. They put him together in a relationship with Dr. Tucker, which I really didn't think that Regan and O'Neill had much in the way of chemistry.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff. There's, you know, the relationship Dr. Tucker has with her mother, with the, I think his name is Nick, the raver, drum and bass listening assistant hacker guy, with the big hair. He was a character that I think had a lot more potential than they really used with him. But it's something, it's very much of its time. And I can't say, like I said, it was a bit of a slog for me to get through, but there were bits of it that really, really struck me as being, okay, this is an attempt to do proper drama. They're not going and doing, I mean, yes, they're using kind of like an alien sci-fi invasion pulp aspect type thing here, but you know, the fate of Lieutenant Terrell, where you know, he ultimately ends up getting attempts to abduct him again, and he basically begs the Shoulders to shoot him and kill him to keep him from falling into the hands of the NDs again.
Yeah.
Which they do. I mean, that's pretty dark and horrific, no matter what kind of thing you're dealing with here, you know. And that's again, that's something that, you know, in particular in 1998, that, I mean, we're probably more desensitized to it now because we live in an age of, you know, Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, and this idea that, you know, anybody can die, any character can die at any time. But I suspect to people watching in 1998, the character portrayed very sympathetically, for him to have him to be written out of the series like that must have been very shocking.
Mm. I think also the fact that when we finally catch up with the Echoes, we have when the Echoes arrives on Earth while this is obviously going on, and we find out that the whole race has committed self-genocide rather than allow for the NDs to harvest their race. And
oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah,
and it's like, wow, it's like you know, that what's when you think, oh, like, another alien race, they're going to give us the technology to sort of bail us out, because, you know, Earth tech's so far behind, so we can't jump dimensions, we don't have space travel the way that the Echoes have. You know, they're going to come out and they're going to help us get the winning edge. But no, they've decided that they're going to opt out the war by committing self-genocide. And
yeah,
it is like, wow, that's, I mean, that's a, something I've yet to see seeing anything else, that a race gives up by just thinking, you know what, we're just gonna, the only way out of this war is that we just all end it now.
I do not want to know what Jed Mercurio was going through in his personal life when he wrote this.
Wow, I mean,
there are just some wow, that's fucking dark.
Yeah. But I think for that reason, that some of the original ideas in this, I think it makes it one of the series that I still would recommend watching. I mean, there's this, there's also the miniseries The Last Train, which is also really well worth revisiting, where we've got this group of survivors, they're cryogenically frozen, and they, as a meteorite hits the Earth, and they wake up in this like post-apocalyptic version of Britain. That would be another series that I would love to go back and revisit at some point. I mean, obviously not next episode, because I think it's enough for you to spend one episode sitting through six 1 hour episodes of a series, never mind doing it twice in two months in a row. But no, I'm glad that I revisited it. And it was fun to show you, even though looking back on it, you can see there's flaws there and ways to improve it, but as it stands, I think I really enjoy it, and Fred Willard's really great in it as the token American.
The token Yank.
You would think that he's going to be the gung-ho one, but no, he's pretty much on the level. He's just the military man, and wants to do things by the book. He's not like the gung-ho American that we like to frequently portray Americans as being when it comes to British writing.
And which, as the token Yank on this podcast, I cannot at all blame you for that.
But yeah, I mean, any sort of final thoughts on Invasion Earth?
Not really. I think I think I want to revisit this at some point.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of like I said, my attention span has taken something of a dip this year, and something like six episodes overstuffed with ideas, and you know, you can't fault this series for ambition. This is a show that it's not phoning it in.
No,
you know, that's what I can say about it. It's not phoning it in. Jed Mercurio has some really interesting ideas he wants to deal with here. He wants to explore, and he's going to do it, and it's going to, you know, he's gonna, you know, again, like I said earlier, it's not sort of like a sort of throwaway pulpy, you know, kind of bit of fluff. I mean, this is science fiction as commentary, science fiction as allegory, really here. You can't fault it for that. Particularly at a time when science fiction was increasingly becoming the thing that you would use as an excuse to have explosions.
Yeah.
It, like I said, it's got too many ideas, but I would rather see a show that fails ambitiously than aims for mediocrity and hits it square in the chest. So, and I wouldn't say this fails. I would just say it's Mercurio bit off a bit more than he could chew here. But I respect him for that. He's definitely going for something here, and he doesn't hit the target all the time. But ultimately, you can't fault him for not trying.
Cool. So yeah, that was the Invasion Earth. Obviously, next episode we're going to go for something a little bit different, as we're going to be doing a Roll Your Own Top 5 episode. So we are going to be each sharing our top 5 episodes of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So, yeah, you will finally get to see which are both mine and Mackie's top five episodes of a show that it's safe to say we're both pretty hooked on.
Yeah.
It's just obviously wrapped up its 12th season. Seasons 13 and 14 are currently in production. But in the meantime, I feel that we're going to provide something of a starter guide to the show. So if you've obviously not seen it already, make sure you tune in for our next episode, where we, as I said, we'll be counting down our top fives for the show. And it's going to be interesting to see what obviously makes the cut and what depravity appears on the list. But before we obviously go, Lucky, I mean, is there anything you want to plug?
I mean, I have a website at LackeyOnFilm.com that has not been updated in quite some time. And I'm having a little bit of a dry period when it comes down to writing about film. And I don't know if I'm going to be returning to that because I think I'm really burned out on that. But it's still there and you can still see if you ever really found yourself wondering, gee, I wonder what Lackey thinks about, say, Prometheus. You can go to my site and read exactly how I felt about Prometheus and many other films besides. So that's there. That's pretty much all I want to plug.
Cool. As for myself, it's as always, you can find my blog From the Depths of DVD Hell at fromthedepthsofdvdhell.blogspot.co.uk. We're also on Twitter at @Elwood_Jones. And if you haven't done already, please like and follow us on Facebook, which is just look up TV Good Sleep Bad. We post various news stories as they come through, as well as clips and other fun stuff on there as well. We also love to hear any suggestions of shows you'd love to see covered on this podcast. If there's a show that you would like us to cover and that we haven't done already, please let us know and add it onto the list. But until next time, I mean, obviously, I'd like to thank my co-host, as always, Mr. Daniel Lackey.
Always a pleasure to record an episode.
This is Edward Jones, signing off for another edition of TV Good Sleep Bad. And remind you, as always, to keep it strange.